Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Be Unique Unscripted, because an authentic life is unscripted. Presented by Bronner House Museum, Elisa Kaler, the spiritual therapist, and Little Green Oasis. Unscripted brings you amazing guests and open mic nights every Thursday night at 9 o'clock Eastern Time. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an opportunity to learn more. Visit our calendar on beunique.org to see who we have scheduled to appear next. That's beunique.org.
Welcome. Today is August 20th. It's Thursday. I'm really excited because, number one, this is my third podcast of the week, and after tonight, I get a little break. Gene's been with me throughout the whole week, and he's been kind of holding my hand remotely. Gene Albertson, welcome to the show. You are my star co-host. I really am glad you're here.
Thanks. Appreciate it. I'm glad to be here.
You're welcome. Tonight, as you know, our guest is Tanya. Oh, I forgot to ask you before the show. That's another reason I like to do our pre-show. How do you pronounce your last name, Tanya?
Tool,
just like it's spelled.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Tanya is holding out help for people who are facing bondage and tragedy. She is the founder of the organization called Holding Out Help. And rather than just reading what I've got on my screen that anybody can read, I'm going to say, we're going to talk to Tanya about this, but number one, we're having a giveaway tonight. If anybody wants to call in and speak with us, Tanya has a book that she will mail you, I hope. It's called
Yes,
Escape.
I will. I got it.
So if you want to call in, the number is 516-418-5651. Tanya, why don't you just tell us how you got started with, 13 years ago, with Holding Out Help? How did you come up with this?
Sure. So we're from Nebraska, not from Utah, and my husband and I got transferred to Utah, and we kind of used to joke around that my husband was going to move to Utah and take on additional wives, and because we really thought it was in the history, like years and years and years, hundreds of years, you know, prior that they practiced. But we landed here, and through kind of a series of situations, we had moved into a larger home where we could have a live-in. I was diagnosed with terminal cancer at the time, and somebody got wind that I was doing better and I had some space in my home. And so they asked us if we would be a safe house for those who were fleeing from polygamy. And I just remember sitting my family down and saying, gosh, are we going to live in, you know, freedom, and or are we going to live in fear of when the cancer returns? And so we said yes. And it was still a year and a half later that we got our first family, a lady, her mother, and her four young kids, and they moved in. And we were kind of shocked at what we were hearing that was happening in our backyard. And when they got to the point where they were transitioning out, they sat us down and said, would you be willing to start a nonprofit to help others? And so we started it really small, a little mom and pop shop out of our home, and we had our home full of polygamists for 3 years. One time, gosh, I think we had 16 people, 12 children in our home. And through that whole process, we realized we needed more help. So we just reached out to our community and started a 501c3, and the rest is kind of history.
I want to backtrack just a little bit because I want to make sure that our listeners understand. You said at one point your home was full of polygamists. Actually, if I understand correctly, your home was full of former polygamists. These were primarily women, right?
Primarily women and children, but they're... Well, we did have the family. We had a large family that was a husband and a wife. with, I want to say they had 6 children at the time, and then they had another one after. But they left one of their wives back in the community. So they had fled the community, but, you know, they the one wife would not leave with them. And we would have taken them all in because, you know, that's kind of, we try not to judge. That's their life. And they were lovely people, and they missed the other wife. And so we sent a care package actually into her, and with a little love note tucked underneath. And she just weeped and cried but said she couldn't leave. But, yeah, we'll help anybody. We primarily do women with children, and then we have a ton of youth. So kids that are either kicked out that are underage or kids that run away. And so we'll help just about – we've helped as young as 5 years old.
Oh, my goodness. Now, a 5-year-old would have run away from this home?
Nope. So the 5-year-old actually came out with the – well, we had 4 kids from this home that came out with their father, but their father had been so traumatized and abused that he was disassociating. And so he came to us and said, I am not healthy enough to raise these kids, and so would you – find a home for all of them to be in, and could I still be a part of their life? And so we found an amazing, wonderful Christian family, actually, who took all 4 kids in. They already had 3 girls, and they raised them as their own and still allowed the father to see them when he could and when he was able to. And the kids are actually starting to graduate from high school now. They all have 4.0s. It's pretty incredible. So
that is awesome. That's good for them. Now, these are... I read some statistics, I think, that on your website. There's anywhere from 40 to 100,000 polygamists who live in the Western United States, primarily in or around Utah, but yet there are some in Canada and Mexico. Are these
quite a bit
mostly,
in Canada and Mexico? Yep.
Are these mostly people that take on multiple wives as part of their religion?
Yes, so a majority of them, I would say, do live this lifestyle because it is their religious beliefs. According to their belief, they have to have 3 wives in order to reach the highest level in heaven. And the highest level, there's 3 levels, and the highest level is where God resides. So if you want to be at the highest level and be in the presence of God, then you have to follow that protocol. So it is a deep belief system, but you also have a lot of people in these communities that don't practice polygamy. So you kind of got every walk of life. It is interesting.
Well, you know, I say it's interesting because I'll be honest, I feel like I am currently right now in the presence of God. There are 3 of us here, and we're very, and it doesn't matter if we go to church or, say I'm a Christian, but we are all 3 good people, and that makes me feel like I'm in God's presence when I'm with other people that are like-minded.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said.
These communities typically were very, what is the word I'm looking for? They were very rigid and structured in as far as what people could wear or even who they could talk to, right?
Yeah, so most of these communities, especially the FLDS that most of the U.S. is actually aware of, they monitor everything. So the environment is closed. They make most of your decisions. So they're going to tell you what to wear, what to watch, what to read, what to eat, who you can associate with. They even, and especially the FLDS, they actually even do, they used to do, I don't know if they're doing them today, but checklists. And so you'd write down every piece of furniture you have in your home. You'd even write down the number of prairie dresses and garments that you have. And if they feel like somebody is more worthy or more in need, they're going to ask you to give those items up for the common good of the whole. The crazy thing is they have very little to no education in there. Because it's a super controlled environment, they usually don't own anything. And top that with the unfortunate piece of abuse that happens very common, it's hard to transition from that closed community to come out to our world where you've got to know how to make the most basic decisions. Most don't even know what their favorite food or color is. And so it's a long process to acclimate them out here to mainstream society.
I bet that when they come to your house, you just give them chocolate, 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 You know, here, try this. This will be your new favorite.
Chocolate's a sin in there. So I used to go down. I would put a trailer behind me, and I would put all kinds of food, hygiene items, toiletries, whatever they needed. And I would always go to Costco, and I would buy big bags of chocolate because they're not allowed to have it. And the women always knew what I had in there. And so I would meet them on the and outside of town or behind hotels at night. And the first thing they would ask me for is, do you have any chocolate, Tanya? And I would say, as a matter of fact, I do. I would just fill them with tons of chocolate. They loved it. So
my husband, when we first got, we were not even married yet. He started calling me the chocolate goddess because he said because he'd come home sometimes with, you know, at the end of the day or whatever, and he'd give me a little chocolate bar I picked up on the way home. And he said that my face just lit up he could have brought me a rattlesnake and I probably would have been just as happy, because that meant that he thought about me, you know? But because he did not bring me rattlesnakes, he brought me chocolate, and he started calling me the chocolate goddess. He said he felt like he was bringing an offering to some entity, you know?
That is so cute. All I have to say is he's a good man. He's a good man.
Yes, he is. He is. He lets me play with Be Unique and talk to people like you. And so I feel so honored to be his wife, because I don't earn my keep any other way. my life is this nonprofit, and I really will say that I have a very good husband, because this is my second husband, and my first one would not have approved in any way, shape, or form of me not actually bringing in income for the family, because it all goes back to the organization.
Right.
Well, I'm glad you have your new husband, and I'm glad he lets you live your life. That is so important.
Yes. Very. Yes. And that, I think that's why when I found out about Holding Out Help, my heart just cracked a little bit, and I think a lot of the love that's in my heart just spilled over outwards for these people, because we watched Waco on Netflix. We watched that series. Now, I don't believe they were fundamentalists. They were fundamentalists, but I don't know if they were of the Mormon faith per se.
No, I don't think that they were, but you can imagine it's similar.
Yes.
You said,
I think it kind of was a distortion of it, maybe. But
sure. I mean, you can imagine with any of these groups, it's if you get kicked out or you leave, you've lost everything, and you've lost everyone, because you don't own anything. So you've lost your family, your friends, and your social structure, often your faith, and you're going out into a world that you were taught was evil and that you're condemned to hell. And so they have very little hope, and so a lot of them cling on to the only thing that they know, even if it means they have to endure, you know, a ton of labor, or if they have to endure abuse or sharing their husband. I mean, if you think that's the only way to heaven, you're going to do whatever it takes to try to get there. And so for people to leave, they've got to be in a pretty bad spot in order to walk away. It's pretty disheartening.
You know, It's that way, I think, with any form of abuse. When you're, it is what you know, and leaving what you've always known, and what you know, especially I would imagine younger women who may have been either children when they were brought into the community or maybe born into the community.
And most are born. Yeah.
And that would certainly seem to me to be the worst possible difficulty, is being born in that community and then for whether being put out or leaving on your own to, like you said, just be out there completely vulnerable, completely ignorant, and just completely at a loss. So.
Well, and you have to remember, anybody who's abused, their perpetrator is not a perpetrator 100% of the time. So they're still manipulating on the back end, right? So they're still buying things or being kind to them on the other end. And so you always hold out that hope that, okay, maybe it's going to change. Maybe he's not going to hurt me anymore. And so it is this back and forth thing. And some people come out and then go back several times before they fully stay out. If they land with our agency, it's rare, but it's a mental process. It's the mental bondage is the worst.
Wow.
I can imagine. Why would someone be expelled from one of these communities? What would they do that would be so terrible that they'd be kicked out?
Yeah, so we've heard of a lot of times it's getting caught with, you know, listening to secular music. You might get caught looking at someone of the opposite sex because all marriages are arranged. I had the couple that I took in with those kids, they had separated the parents and called them into the bishop's office one at a time and said, you've been convicted of child murder because they said she had a miscarriage, and so she must have sinned in order to cause that miscarriage, so she is technically a murderer. And so it's just the most bizarre things that we wouldn't even think of on why they're kicked out. And so they come out and they feel like
grieving.
They're so what? Say that again?
She would be grieving the loss of that child, you know, her determination of her pregnancy, and not getting any kind of, man, my head is spinning because I'm thinking in terms of people that I know, how miserable they were with, you know, infant death is not a fun thing to endure. And to be accused of having killed that child through something that you didn't even know you were doing.
And the crazy thing in her case is she hadn't even had a miscarriage. And so as she said, they told her, we want you to leave your kids behind. Don't talk to your husband and leave. They told the same thing to the husband. And again, that's their form of control to take over the children's lives. And she and him lived in the same home in agony for 4 days before she said she went into a closet. She said she got on her knees and she started to pray. And then she said she had never felt a peace like this in her life. And she knew she was supposed to get up. She was supposed to tell her husband and they were supposed to leave together. Well, in this community, it was a massive risk to tell your husband, because if your husband is not on the same page, he could grab those kids and disappear forever. But she did it anyway. And lo and behold, he was at the same place in his mind where she was. And so they gathered up their kids at midnight that night and left.
I just got so lost. That's a really powerful story. Wow.
Yeah, they're incredible people. They're incredible people. They drove around the U.S. for like a month on one credit card that he had of $2,000 before he reached out to our agency. And, oh, my gosh, he said, could you come pay for one more night at my hotel? And they're down at a Motel 6 with 8 people crammed in a tiny room in a bad part of town in their polygamous clothes, and I drove into that parking lot, and my husband and I had just decided not to take other people into our home because we needed a sanctuary away from it, and I just started to bawl. I thought, I can't pay this bill, and my husband's a corporate man, never picks up, you know, we never talk in the day until nighttime, and my phone rings, and it's my husband, and I said, what are you doing calling me? He goes, well, what are you doing? And I said, I'm sitting in a parking lot with a family of 8 who is quarantined in a nasty hotel room, and they want me to pay their bill, and I can't pay it, and I have nowhere for this family to go. And my dear, sweet husband said, I think they need to come to our home. And so I have to call this stranger, and I say to this guy, hey, so I know this is going to sound weird, but you're supposed to come to my house. It was the longest pause you had ever heard in your life. And he finally says, yes, I don't have another option, do I? I said, no, sir, you don't. And I said, why don't you follow me to my home? You can have the basement. We'll have the upstairs. And they lived with us for a year. And they did great. They were such great house guests, but yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. That is such a heartwarming story. And I know you must have dozens or hundreds of them. Wow.
We've got a lot. We've got a lot. We've been doing it for 13 years, though, and you have to remember we're serving anywhere between about 150 to 275 people per year. And so, you know, it's interesting that they're flooding out. They're coming out. Their communities are falling apart. They're hearing that there's help out there. And so word of mouth spreads very fast in these communities. And so they're getting the help they need, and we're available.
That's
we don't push them. We don't. Yeah.
You know, because the communities are closed mostly to the outside world. So it's amazing how the word gets back through the underground.
Well, we started by billboards. We put them by Walmarts and Costcos where they shop. and then after that, they were up for years, and then we took them down, and the rest, they just spread underground. So pretty cool.
That is very cool. Yeah, I mean, I can just imagine. It's kind of like, you know, Jean, you were in the military, and I know that I've got a lot of military in my family. When you stop being in the military and you have to be in the regular world, sometimes people don't know what to do. They don't know how to dress, especially people who've been in this for a long, long time. My son had a real hard time adjusting after 20-some years to civilian life, and he had to find something that was as regulated for him to figure out what he was supposed to be doing.
Especially when your identity is caught up in one thing.
Yes. Wow.
Yeah,
I'm
tough.
Going
it's
to
tough.
Take a real quick break.
Yeah.
Go ahead. This is,
no,
this is not by the clock.
Okay, no, I was going to say Gene was going to say something, and I was just asking him what he was going to say, but maybe he forgot already.
I just was thinking about that I was in the military, but, you know, I think that somehow I've got some kind of innate aversion to structure and authority, that was kind of a short-lived.
Because you're an Aquarius like me.
And so I actually had the opposite thing. I struggled my whole life to become, to be more well-adjusted in regular outward society. So just
that's overrated. Don't even sweat that. That is so overrated, being well-adjusted.
Yeah, I agree. That's why it never worked for me very well.
I want to remind anybody who's listening live, if you would like to get a copy of the book Escape, and we'll let you talk about that a little bit more when we come back from the commercial. Give us a call, 516-418-5651. We'll be right back.
When I walk in the spot, this is what
he's smart, funny, and very good looking, but he won't let it go to his head.
Out of all my stunning attributes, it's my humility that makes me perfect.
I'm sexy and I know it.
He's Thor, and he's hosting the new show, Thornication, Tuesday nights at 8 o'clock, only on astronautradio.com.
We have four commercials that are random, and I never know what I'm going to get. The rest of my commercials I can manage, but those four, I never know who's coming up. But we are here with Tanya Tewell talking about her organization, Holding Out Help. She actually helps people who are leaving or have left polygamous communities. She helps them acclimate back to regular society, or I guess regular society is where we live. I'm not even sure.
Yeah,
but we were talking
well
earlier about a book you're giving away called Escape. Would you care to tell us a little bit about who wrote that book?
Yeah, Carolyn Jessup, a very courageous woman who was married to one of the leaders named Meryl Jessup, and she escaped with all of her children one night. She said something like a gallon of gas. And as she drove down the hill out of the community, it started to sputter and die. The great thing was, is he was supposed to meet her on the other side, met her on the freeway and packed those kids in another vehicle and was able to get away. But I know her son a little bit more, who is very successful in our world now. And she said when they came out, most kids don't have much of an education. So they sent him to school, and he was absolutely refusing. And so she was strong enough to say, all right, then the police are going to have to take you. So he got handcuffed and forced to go to school.
Oh, wow.
And he finally determined that if I'm going to have to be there, then I'm going to make something of myself, and went all the way through college and is in the finance world today. But Carolyn's absolutely courageous and amazing. Solid girl. Lives in Texas, I believe, now. So.
And the book is the story, Escape, the story of her story.
it is, it's her story. And I mean, it is, it's very well written, and it's just mind blowing all the mental stuff she had to go through to get these kids out. And she had a very disabled child that she had to get out along with, you know, all the other kids. And I believe that child was on oxygen. I can't remember the full story. It's been written a little bit ago, but she mustered it up. And when he left, she fled and was able to get away and make an incredible life for herself. So, yep, anybody that wants one, you can sign up. I probably have about five, and I'm happy to get those out to whoever would like one. So,
give us a call and let us know that you'd like to have a copy of the book Escape by Carolyn Jessup. Mm-hmm. And we'll make sure you get one.
Sure, give us a call.
The number is 516-418-5651. 5651. It's the Mary and Jean Comedy Hour, people. If you can't laugh, you might as well. What is it you always say, Jean? If you're not having fun, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, you're not doing it right. Exactly.
You can go ahead first, Jean.
Well, I just was going to talk a little bit. I had an interest in the history of the polygamy in the Mormon Church, and I did a little bit of general reading this afternoon, and it's interesting because I thought, really kind of like you did, that it was something that was in the past, you know, something they'd given up. And what I found out was that apparently in order to become a state from a territory, that they had to legally denounce it, because they were not going to become a state if they still practiced it. And even though the church still went ahead and denounced it over the years, that there was still a very clear presence of it that a lot of the church members didn't even know was there until later on, the closer it got to the present century, that the church actually did break away from the idea, and that these fringe groups that are holding on to the polygamy idea are the groups like you pointed out, the FLDS. And it's fascinating. I thought it was gone, like you said, until I checked it out.
Gene, you did your homework. And, you know, people are like, are these people crazy? Why do they still practice if it was denounced? Well, in the actual revelation from Joseph Smith in 1843, they said in the revelation that it was an everlasting covenant, thus saith the Lord. Because of those two phrases, even though they were supposed to denounce it, they secretly practiced it for a couple years before, you know, the great divide happened between what we now know as the mainstream LDS church and the fundamentalists, or also known, you know, the polygamists. For those of you, if I say fundamentalists, that means the people off the core doctrine. And so that's why they still practice it. They're not crazy. They're very bright people. And they believe that that is the way to live it. And then you do have your crazies, right? So you have your ones that live it for perversion reasons and take advantage of the power and control. But I think a majority live it because they believe that's what God calls them to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, help me with my history. I'm rusty on this, but if I remember correctly, Joseph Smith believed that during the 3 days that Jesus Christ was in the tomb before he was resurrected, he came from Jerusalem to, I guess he time traveled and came to the United States and visited Joseph Smith. Am I accurate or not?
Yeah, they believe that they believe in separate entities. So they do believe that Joseph Smith was visited by both God and Jesus Christ. And there were these tablets that were supposedly given down from God on how they were supposed to live. But those tablets have, you know, obviously essentially never been found. I don't know as much of the history. I haven't really studied it super big, believe it or not. I just try to serve and rehabilitate people and that sort of thing. But, yes, he was supposedly visited by two beings. And I think when he was 14 years old, You don't quote me on that, but I believe he said he was 14 years old when that actually happened. So, and that's where the Mormon Church was developed from.
You know, and too, also we're talking about history, that same time period that Joseph Smith was having his visions and growing up and forming this, that was an era that there were people having visions like him all over the place. There were actually, it was kind of a popular thing at the time. There's a guy named Matthias that was like, I would almost say a competitor of Joseph Smith in the earliest days. As far as gathering people. So,
Yep. There was witchcraft. I mean, I know Joseph Smith had the seer stone in the hat, and he would put his head in the dark hat, and the seer stone would be at the bottom, and it would light up, and it would give him words, and then he would have somebody standing on the side writing everything down that he told them to write down. And that was his, I guess, his revelations. That's probably where a lot of his doctrine came from. So, but yeah, he definitely did believe in polygamy as an everlasting covenant. And so it's interesting. And in the 1890 manifesto, you know, it's interesting the wording, because it says in there, if you read it, that they promised not to practice future plural marriages. So you wonder how many remained, how many did it secretly. I do know today there are people in the current LDS church that do practice polygamy, but they keep it quiet because they would be kicked out of the mainstream LDS church.
Right.
So you have both sides. And then again, you have people in polygamy that aren't necessarily polygamists. So they prefer to be called fundamentalists because they believe in the doctrine, but they're not practicing plural marriage at that time. So it's all kind of muddled. And it's interesting here, there's they almost don't get along, but we just had a law passed that polygamy went from a felony down to essentially the same as a traffic ticket. And so I'm wondering if the divide will, you know, stop, or, you know, people are hurt each other a little bit more, because there's a lot of division here, and it's heartbreaking. That's not what God calls of us. So,
no, and, you know, back in the Old Testament times, there was polygamy. That was what was practiced. And they had their reasons for it. I mean, we're talking 2,000 to 5,000 years ago. But even Jesus said the old ways are gone. You know, he brought a new message. And I think a lot of
if you ever read those, though, you will see there's always turmoil in those relationships as well.
Yeah.
Like, this wasn't some big, happy family living polygamy. And what's interesting with the people that we have served, which are, you know, thousands, I have met very few that would say they lived it happily. Or a lot of times I'll say, you know, did you know anybody that lived it, you know, in a happy way inside your community? And almost inevitably everyone says no. I finally met one that says they did. They were divorced within months of leaving the community altogether. But It's interesting. I just find very few that are happy living it. So I can't imagine doing it. I mean, it calls a lot of, especially a woman.
But this goes back to what we were talking about. You know, that's all they know. So if they don't know what chocolate tastes like, they don't know if they like it or not. So if they only know abuse and domination and possessiveness and, you know, the control. They know how to be controlled. They're as happy as they can be in that environment. But then when they get out and they realize there are other people that make me feel a different way, and it's nice to not have to be dictated my choices every day. And to have a choice,
The first family that left, the girl, the mom described it so well. She said, our belief system, it wasn't enough to live it. If you didn't internally believe it in your heart, she said, they still tell you you're condemned to hell. So the women will tell themselves, as she says over and over, I'm happy in this. This is wonderful life. This is worth it. And so she says, you just got to tell yourself over and over and over to try to make yourself believe that it's a great life. And I had not known that at first. I was like, what? Like, they said, yes, God knows your mind and your heart. So if he knows you're actually really unhappy, then you're living, you don't make it. you don't make it.
Talk about ultimate anxiety, you know?
Yep. It's a lot. It's a lot.
Wow.
And, you know, her situation is kind of cool.
Children.
Go ahead.
To raise your children in that environment, it would be unthinkable. I just cannot imagine having small children and trying to teach them right from wrong in that kind of environment.
Yeah. And it's interesting, and I do need to make this one disclosure with, you know, all the listeners. You know, you have your really tight-knit, closed communities, which is a majority of polygamists or fundamentalists, but there are also people called independents, and those people don't belong to a specific prophet, and they're not living in a closed environment. They're living in a mainstream world, the same world that you and I live in. That may be different. I don't see a ton of people come to me from that world. So they're, I mean, realistically, I can't say that not everybody's happy in it. I can only say what I have experienced with all the people that I've served over the years and the experience that I've had and what my people have endured have been horrific. I don't want to make that light. It has been horrific for the clients that we've served. But there may be people out there that do live it well. I don't know, and are happy through it, you know. So
there's
it's not
people in the world
for everybody.
Right, right. So when you get do you get a phone call from someone, or how do these
yeah,
people?
Yeah, so
and you
for
connect?
Example, yeah, that's a great question, Mary, because we get a phone call. So let me give you an example of a 14-year-old boy that is called in. So he will call me and he will say, I want to leave. And usually the typical story is I work, you know, 12, 14-hour days. They don't allow me to go to school. I'm not allowed a life. I don't have many friends because I'm working all the time. I can't do this anymore. And then a lot of times I will get the abuse story. Most times I don't know they're abused until they go through intensive therapy. At that point, I will say to the child, do your parents know that you want to leave, and would they support you? And I either get a yes or no. If it's a 14-year-old boy, obviously we can't just go pick him up because that could constitute kidnapping. And so I will let him know if he's not being abused, you know, do your best until you're old enough to make those decisions. What usually happens is he'll hitch a ride from somebody down to Salt Lake. They land on my doorstep. And then at that point, I treat these parents with the utmost respect. And so my goal is not to be judgmental of them, but to offer them another solution, because a lot of times once the kid leaves, they're considered what's called apostates, and they are the worst of the worst. And so a lot of times they won't be able to take those kids back in. And so I will pick up the phone and I will call the parents and I will say, you know, Mr. Steve, this is Tanya Toole, the executive director of Holding Out Help. Your son or daughter has landed here at our agency and they do not want to go back home. Would you partner with me if I put you up in a hotel here, and would you help me find a host family, check out the schools, and be part of the process of making sure your child is well taken care of? Most of the time they will not come. There's been a lot of times where they will come. And if they, let's say they say, nope, we want to come get our kid right now. I'm like, you know, you are the biological parent and you have that right. If your child, however, refuses to go with you, then unfortunately I have no option but to call the state and have the state involved. It is mind-blowing how many times they will run the other way because they don't want to get involved with the state because they're scared their other children are going to get taken away, or they know they abused the child and there's going to be an investigation. And so most of the time we're pretty successful at having them work with us, and you know, they have to sign documents, they have to sign their children over to the new family. But it's so important for me to respect them, because I have to remember it's all they know. They were born and raised, and by me being kind, if they need help down the road, they know they have somebody to call.
Right.
And
yes.
So that's kind of how we navigate that process with our, they usually call us, and or somebody refers them, or they're dropped off, or you know, it could be a myriad of things, but that's a typical case of a child. So,
well, what about you told the story earlier of meeting the women behind the Costco and giving them chocolate. Now, were these women that have not come out yet?
So we used to have a community center in the heart of the FLDS community. And so we had a lot of people. Warren Jeffs was their leader, their prophet, was put in prison for life plus 20 years for doing marriages with underage girls. And then they had a recording of him raping a 12-year-old little girl, Marianne. And so he was put in. But once a prophet, always a prophet until death. And so as he had his privileges taken away, he started clamping down in his community. And so at one point, they were literally getting a cup of rice, a cup of beans a day. So they were down to one meal. You had to pull up to a gate. If you were deemed worthy, you put in a code into the gate opened, and you got your tiny little box of rations for 15, you know, family of 15 in the home. And so we would get calls, and they wouldn't want to leave their community because they knew they would lose their family. Their kids could be pulled away from them. So we would say, you know, we're not going to force you to do anything. We will still serve you where you're at. And so we would make appointments and sneak out of town and other towns or neighborhoods, parks, wherever we could to get them the food and the necessities that they needed so they could take care of their children. A lot of their children were very malnourished around that time. And so we would sneak them in food. We would sneak them in Christmas gifts. I mean, we did all kinds of stuff out there. Our center, they would come in. A lot of the teenagers would sneak in and try to do schooling or play games, or they just wanted to snack after school. They wanted to talk to somebody outside of their community, all that kind of stuff. They had cameras, and they circled us all the time. They called it the God Squad that would follow me, and we had cameras facing them. And so, you know, it was a risk for them to come in, but you knew they were so desperate for unconditional love that they would actually take the risk to step foot in our center.
Did you get official grief from the church, the official organization? I mean, they came after you?
So they would. I have never been hurt. I've been followed. I've been threatened. But they would pick me up about 20 miles outside of the town. The God Squad would sit on the outside of the town to see, monitor who was coming in and out. And so they would see me coming in. I would get the calls from the people I was serving that were, you know, hearing this. And they would say, yep, they said that you're coming into town. You got a trailer and you're stealing our children and putting the children in the trailer. And I would laugh. But then I would start driving down a road, and a mother would see me with her kids out, and I mean, the fear on her face. I remember this one lady, and she would make kids run, so they ran, and I went down to the end of the street and realized I hit a dead end. And I was like, I can't turn around. This lady is terrified, but I had to Yui, and I went back around, and I mean, that lady was certain I was going to steal her children and run with them. It was horrible what they would teach these people. So, yeah, they would follow me like ants. They had probably at least 5 cars on me at all times. They would pull up behind me at night and put flashers on, and then I'd pull over thinking it was a police officer. Then they'd zoom off. I would have, you know, phone calls, threats, we're coming after you. But I knew most of it was intimidation, and so I'm not going to stop because someone threatens me. So, we just kept doing the best we could.
Wow. That's awesome.
Now, how many people have you helped in the last 13 years? Do you have a number of that?
Yeah. So, I mean, it kind of doubled every year, started at 30, then 60, and then 120. And like I said, 150 to, 275. And so we've probably served, I would have to look at my stats, but well over, 2,000 and some, I don't know without looking at them, but at least probably.
I can't do the math in my head that fast, but that's really commendable. That's got to make you feel like you're doing something of value.
Well, I know. And you know what's amazing is I get more out of it probably than they do. It is such an honor and a privilege to serve people that come from these communities and have no hope, and to share with them that they are worthy, that they are loved, that they are strong, they are resilient, and they can make it. And I think that's the biggest takeaway. And then after all of that, what do they give me? Oh, my gosh, they think I am their hero. And I'm like, please don't put me there because I will fail you every moment of every day. But I have so many friends who are from this culture. It's just such a blessing, and they're so grateful and so kind.
I'm sure.
you know, you are a really kind of a superhero, because, you know, you just keep going no matter what, and you definitely giving hope is pretty super, you know, especially to people that don't have it, and I can see where they wouldn't have it.
Yeah.
This is awesome.
I'm going to take another break, and I'm going to remind our listeners, if anyone's listening live and you want to call in, and if you're not in the United States, call in anyway. Our country code is 1. It's easy. Just dial your country exit code or use WhatsApp, and you can dial 516-418-5651. If you call in, you will get a copy of Escape by Carolyn Jessup. I'm going to take a little quick break, and when I come back, I want to talk about a recent time. You were recently on the Dr. Phil show, I believe. So
yeah.
We'll talk about that.
Hello.
Great.
If you like the show tonight, let us know. Call 321-417-4309 or email mary@beunique.org to ask how you can sponsor the show. It's simple and doesn't have to cost much at all. Visit beunique.org for even more details. That's beunique.org. Join the global world changers who already know how Be Unique helps bring together like-minded humans who are making the world a better place. Read the magazine and blog posts, watch our videos, listen to our podcast, and visit our social media from one location, and let's work together. Change tomorrow by finding solutions today. Visit beunique.org to learn more. That's beunique.org.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Mary. I'm here with Jean and Tanya Toole. And we have been talking about Tanya's organization, Holding Out Help. And we've been hoping somebody would call 516-418-5651. If you call, you get a free gift no matter where you live. Tanya, you were on, you and one of the, I guess you call them your clients.
Yes.
People that, you were recently on, I'm not sure how recent it was, but you were on the Dr. Phil show, correct?
Yes, that is correct. We had Ian Jeffs on the show with us, which is a nephew of the prophet Warren Jeffs, who came out through our agency at the age of 15. And then we were on with Marilyn, who came out, roughly her whole family came out. It was 8 people, and she was about 21 years old, and that poor girl was molested every day of her life, multiple times a day, until she left that community. Horrific story, but we were able to go on. They wanted to share their story with the world, and I just was kind of there more as moral support, but Dr. Phil was so gracious and so wonderful with my clients, and ended up giving us unlimited counseling through his Doctor on Demand service. So it was a nice time.
That's awesome.
Yep.
That is really good.
And
our sweet,
you know,
and awareness. What were you going to say? Go ahead.
We think, you know, we talk about, and we've talked about it up till this point, about abuse, but we don't think in terms of what that abuse entails. And there are so many forms of abuse, and I know that mental abuse is one, emotional abuse is another, psychological. And I know that they believe in spare the rod, spoil the child, so there's probably corporal punishment lavished out quite frequently. But I just, for some reason in my mind, I had blocked out the idea of sexual abuse. And I do know that that seems to be the norm. You know, you've got an adult of whatever age, and he seems to want to be with these very, very young girls.
Yeah,
that's one of the reasons they have these multiple wives.
Yeah, so I would say that, I mean, in Marilyn's instance, she was, so when Warren was put in prison, he annulled all the marriages, and so there were not supposed to be any more marriages, and men and women were separated, and they were put under what's called caretakers. And so Marilyn and her family were in a house where two full families, large families, resided. And so Marilyn would go upstairs and be brutalized by the other family and downstairs and be brutalized by others. And then she would be taken out at night to the meeting house, and they would perform ritualistic abuse on her as well. And so this, it's obviously horrific. I would say most of the abuse happens in these homes where multiple families are on top of each other. And because they don't talk about their kids, they don't talk to their kids about sex, they don't talk about anything, you're supposed to learn about it on your wedding night, they naturally are curious. And so they start messing around with each other. And pretty soon you've got, you know, boys raping the girls in the home, or the uncles raping the girls, or the caretaker raping the girls. And it happens almost as often with my boys, unfortunately. So, but it starts with the top down, right? So if Warren, their prophet, is doing it, and he did it to a ton of people, and it stems from him all the way down, then that's okay behavior in there, right? So you do it, and guess what? Nobody reprimands you. They brush it under the rug. They don't care. And you don't dare go for help on the outside. Because that's taboo in your community. They're taught to fear the outside world. So it's hard. It's disheartening. And we're kind of in a really pivotal time now where this kind of stuff happened all the time. Then Warren was sent to prison. And unfortunately, one of his brothers is taking over, and he's just as bad as Warren. So we're getting child after child after child that has dealt with so much horrific abuse that we're looking to. We can't put them in a regular host home. Like, so host homes are families like yours and mine that say, yes, I'm willing to take this child in and raise him as my own. But the trauma is so bad that putting them in a host home, the host home would be ill-equipped to navigate it. So we're trying now to bring on staff to do around-the-clock care for some of these, you know, severely traumatized clients of ours, so we can get them healthy and hopefully be able to eventually transition them out into the, you know, real world. But it's been hard. It's been really hard lately.
Wow. Well, these children, especially that have been multiply abused for years, probably do not know how to behave around typical family.
Mm-hmm. No, their boundaries, they don't know normal boundaries like you and I at all. And if you don't walk closely with them and teach them what's appropriate and what's not, they could get themselves in trouble in their host families. And so we have to be very forthright with our host families that, you know, even though if the child says they have not been abused, when you look at our statistics where, you know, close to 75% of our cases have dealt with that, they need to assume that child has been molested, and they need to assume that he could be a predator to other people in his home. And that's why they've got to continue to get intense therapy and not leave that child alone with other children. And so it's really a very careful balancing act, you know, that we have to do. So it's hard. And then the current ones that are coming out, there's no way I would place them in a host family. You know, there's just no way I would do that to someone. And so, you know, we're looking at establishing, a couple other homes. We can have a girls' home and a boys' home while we get them functioning.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you see an upswing in the number of people coming out now than when you first started doing this? Do you think this is coming to light where it's on its way to ending? I mean, do they have internet in this community and that sort of thing?
No, they didn't. They're not supposed to. They're not supposed to have internet. They're not supposed to read newspapers. They're not supposed to have smartphones, if any phones. These kids are very creative and figure out ways. But do I think it's going away? No way. It is not going away. I do think the FLDS community is being broken down thanks to warriors like Sam Brower, who's a private investigator who has just worked hard on trying to break their town charter down. But what's happening is they're scattering through the U.S., and as they scatter, nobody knows who to follow any longer because their prophet's in prison, and so they're grasping on to anybody with a, you know, a last name, or they're taking over and trying to control their own, you know, destiny. And so there's nobody really monitoring what's happening any longer. So people are just free falling, and, And the abuse seems to recently be getting worse. At least that's what we're seeing at our agency. So, it's been sad.
That is very sad. And I imagine that the abuse is their way of trying to maintain order and control. And, when they're...
I would say the abuse is because of their, their mind. They just want something for themselves, and so they just take it. It's not control. They're selfish. I don't know how to say that any other way. For you to hurt a child or to hurt another human being like that, they just are warped in the head and probably looking at porn, and they're living out their fantasies on these people that they know are vulnerable.
That's just one more thing I need to add to my prayers at night.
Please do. Seriously, please do.
Now, Tanya, you have a hotline that runs basically on business hours. 9 to 4 Mountain Time, right?
Yep, that is correct.
Do you ever get calls late at night?
Yes, we do. And we've got a great administrative assistant that takes a cell phone home at night that it transfers over to. And she will pick up occasionally. I try to teach her balance and boundaries, healthy boundaries. I'm like, turn it off. They will get there to you eventually. But, there's sometimes when someone's calling in over and over, and my number's now out there, that if I know they're calling multiple times, I know this is the only shot that they may be able to speak and ask for help.
Yeah.
They're probably in hiding somewhere. So I will oftentimes pick up that phone. You bet.
Well, that phone number, I think I've got it right here, 801-548-3492.
That is it. Correct.
Okay, excellent. And if anybody wants to learn more about your overall organization, your website is holdingouthelp.org. I just wanted to make sure that's out there. Lots of information ways you can help and everything else.
Yep, and we have Facebook under Holding Out Help, and we have an Instagram as well. So,
okay. Excellent.
And I want to remind everybody that Tanya is giving away a book about what we've been talking about, a woman's journey as she escaped from this kind of lifestyle. If you call in, you've got about less than 5 minutes. You've got about 3 minutes left tonight. The number's 516-418-5651. Sometimes we get callers and sometimes we don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's just fine. No, it's just been a privilege to get the word out. And you guys are darling, by the way. I wish I could do this at least once a month with you all.
Well, you can. We can set you up on a regular, right at this moment, we are booked through April. I will reach out to you, Tanya. It was like getting to this point for you and me was just weird because we just kept emailing and missing each other through our spam folders. But if you want to be a regular on here and keep getting the word out, because you just never know.
Mm-hmm.
One day it's going to click and it's going to make a difference. But we can definitely have you back as a regular. Lisa is our last Thursday of the month, and we could just, do you have a preference which Thursday is better than another?
Nope, not necessarily. You name it, and I would be there. I think this is great. It's a great platform, and if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out either way, but yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I will reach out to you with some dates, and we'll get you set up so that it'll be a regular thing, because I like the idea of having regulars on because people look forward to that. And this has been such a great conversation. One of the things that Gina and I do as we end our shows is we always have parting words. And I feel like I've parted my words out, but I want to ask you, Tanya, have you got some final words that you'd like for our listeners to know?
I think definitely, if you ever want to get involved, go to Facebook. That tells it, you know, what we're involved in at that time. And when you order on Amazon, if you go to Amazon Smile, Holding Out Help is there, and everything you buy, a percentage will go. But I think for me, the biggest thing is don't be fearful to get involved in your community. You can make a difference, even if it is one life at a time. And I firmly believe if everyone got involved in something, like I said, even just one person, our world would be a much kinder world. So get involved. Get out there.
We're in the process of making that happen. I think that I really believe we're turning the world around incrementally. I feel like I'm standing on a lever, and I've got a tiny little monkey wrench, and every day I get a wrench. But I would like to say that I want everybody to, when you walk out of your house tomorrow, greet the person you see, whether it is your neighbor, the lawn guy, or you're going to the dentist. It doesn't matter. Whoever you greet, even if you're behind a mask, smile. And remember that you don't know what's going on in that other person's head. So be kind and be respectful.
Amen.
Yep.
Love it.
Absolutely.
James, it's your turn.
Well, you know, I usually like to leave talking about having fun, but I think after tonight's conversation and the whole idea of holding out help really brings me to one of my favorite thoughts that's kind of kept me going many times over the years, is that a very wise man once said that if you're ever in trouble, to look around, there are helpers, and if you don't see any, then you can be one.
Oh, I like that.
That's powerful.
So
like
bless everybody. Yeah, Mr. Rogers. He's my favorite.
Really?
I know. Too.
Mr. Rogers,
yeah. Great man.
You can't go wrong with him.
He kept me going many, many times.
Me too.
So,
I think he kept us all.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to speaking with you again, Tanya.
Yeah, me too. You guys, it has been such an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for having us on, and
I look forward
to the next time we get a chat.
All right.
I will reach out to you tomorrow. I feel like my day is done. I'm going to go sit down with my cat and give him all the attention and love that he needs until he's tired of it, which might take 5 minutes, and it might take the rest of the night. But I want to remind our listeners that starting in September, we haven't quite worked out the date. Gene and I will be on the show. It's going to be called Take a Break with Gene and Mary at noon every weekday for 15 minutes. You're going to have the two of us doing whatever we do. So be prepared.
Who knows? Who knows?
Well, we're both Aquarius, so it could be any number of things. But next week we have Alisa. She's our regular. And we'll let everybody know when Tanya's going to start her Thursday night shows. We'll get all that worked out, and you know, after tomorrow. Good night, everybody.
Excellent. Good night. See you.
Good night.
Bye.
See ya.
Thank you for listening this evening. We're happy you chose to spend this time with us, and we hope you learned as much as we did.
Every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
And if you'd like us to invite you or someone you know to speak right here, just go to beunique.org and contact us there.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around the fact that our newly branded podcast has so many global listeners and that our website and magazine receive thousands of visitors each month. Let's put your brand in front of all those people. Mary can share the demographics with you. Contact her through the website. That's BUNEKE.org.